Okay, as I said before, we're finishing the series on Joshua today that Billy's going to come up and speak in just a moment. So the reading today is Joshua 24, verses 14 to 28. That's on page 240 in the church Bibles. And we're thinking about we will serve the Lord and serving the Lord. Okay, so Joshua 24, verses 14 to 28. Now fear the Lord and serve him with faithfulness. Throw away the gods your forefathers worshipped beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Then the people answered, Far be it from us to forsake the Lord, to serve other gods. It was the Lord our God himself who brought us and our fathers up out of Egypt from the land of slavery and performed those great signs before our eyes. He protected us on our entire journey and among the nations through which we traveled. And the Lord drove out before us all the nations, including the Amorites, who lived in the land. We too will serve the Lord, because he is our God. Joshua said to the people, You are not able to serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your rebellion and your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, he will turn and bring disaster on you and make an end of you after he has been good to you. But the people said to Joshua, No, we will serve the Lord. Then Joshua said, You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen to serve the Lord. Yes, we are witnesses, they replied. Now then, said Joshua, throw away the foreign gods that are among you and yield your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel. And the people said to Joshua, We will serve the Lord our God and obey him. On that day, Joshua made a covenant for the people, and there at Shechem, he drew up for them decrees and laws. And Joshua recorded these things in the book of the law of God. Then he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak near the holy place of the Lord. He said to the people, This stone will be a witness against us. He has heard all the words the Lord has said to us. It will be a witness against you if you are untrue to your God. Then Joshua sent the people away, each to his own inheritance. And he's just going to come up and preach. Let me pray. Lord, I pray that you will guide Billy in his words. And I pray that we will have ears to listen, Lord. Break down any prejudices that we have in our hearts that would make us not hear what you are trying to say to us, Father.
Fact, while I was preparing for today, I was looking back through my sermons to see if I'd preached on this before. And I discovered, yes, I had preached on it once before, 17 years ago in this church. I was the last person in this church to preach on Joshua 24, because somebody gave me all the records of the sermons preached, and it was me. What's the odds of that? Isn't that fantastic? So it may be, I'm really honing it now. This is, you know, repetition. So forgive me, don't yawn if you've heard it all before, okay? We have had a great run through the book of Joshua. It is one of my favourite books in the Bible. Why there hasn't been Joshua the movie, I'm not sure, because it is such an exciting book. And right from the start, where Joshua is encouraged by God, we heard Chris Wigram preaching about believing, having strength, being bold, being strong. God is with you. Right there at the beginning of Joshua. And we've come through and we've seen the children of Israel crossing the Jordan. I think that was Tim took us through the Jordan, the Ark of the Covenant going before them. Then the Battle of Jericho. Alistair took us through a long journey through about 12, 13 chapters. And it was fantastic to see God going before the people all the way. What a great book. What an encouraging book. And today we reach the end. And the title, We Will Serve the Lord. And I've got a subtitle in my mind, The Bottom Line Choice. I'm an accountant by training, and we often talk about the bottom line. People will say, no, yeah, get to the bottom line. And I'm going to be talking about the bottom line as we go through today. A choice that we need to make that is our bottom line choice. And so the people cry out, we will serve the Lord. Now, I'm sure if you're anything like me, there are times that you have spoken these words out loud yourself, or at least thought them. I will serve the Lord. And you meant them from the depth of your heart. Moments when you just thought, this is for me, this message or this passage of the Bible, or somebody's challenged you and you've said, this is for me, I will serve the Lord. Bottom line, I'm serving God. After all, why would you claim to be a Christian and not want to serve the Lord? It must be more than a social thing we do, right? Must be more. I mean, you get fellowship in a golf club, or a squash club, or a dance club. It must be more than a social thing we do. But you know, having made that sort of commitment, later, to my disappointment and my own shame, I find myself doing or saying or thinking things that I know completely contradict that commitment that I've made to God. That commitment I made to serve God with heart and soul and mind and strength was so real, and then I find myself doing stuff or thinking or saying stuff that just doesn't measure up to that commitment. I wonder, can you empathize with what I'm saying there? Do you understand what I'm saying? But you know what? Give me the failed commitment maker any time of the day than the person who just doesn't care. And I say this because it's not people failing in their commitments that's killing the church. It's apathy. It's people who say, do you know what? What's the big deal? You know, religion, I'll live a good life and I'll be okay. I'm not going to do anything overtly bad, but let's not get too serious about it. Let's not talk about it outside the church. It's that type of apathy that is killing the church. Not people who stand up one Sunday and say, I really want to serve God, and then muck it up. I actually understand people who muck it up. I can't understand apathy. I can understand people who are passionate and who blow it. I can't understand people who say, well, it's not that important. I just do it sometimes on a Sunday. I don't get that. And many, perhaps most Christians, sadly, have become almost indistinguishable from their workmates nowadays, or their friends, or their neighbours. Someone once said to me once, let's see if I can make this work. Someone once said to me, if you were charged by the police with being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? And that stopped me and I thought, wow, would there be? What would the evidence be that I'm a Christian? And I really hope there would be. But what about you? Does the words of Jesus, take up your cross daily, does it ever cross your mind? Today's a cross-carrying day. Would Paul's great pronouncement, for me to live is Christ, have any relevance to you? Would you ever think, for me, life is about Christ? The children of Israel were experiencing a similar challenge to their faith as I'm bringing this morning. And at the end of this chapter, at the end of this book, in this chapter, Joshua gathers them all together to try and establish a real and a genuine passion for God amongst them. And I've no doubt that he'd be addressing a broad spectrum of sort of faith levels in that group. They're no different from you and I. Some people would be really strong in their faith. There are some of the Israelites would be really up for it. They've seen God at work.
They believe it, they're following God, they're fully committed. There are others who would already have sold out body and soul, moral practices, thoughts and everything, sold out to the world around them. And in between, there'd be a large group of their countrymen who as yet had made no clear decision. They wouldn't have decided exactly where they stood with God. Yeah, they could appreciate God was there. They could appreciate some of the things that had happened around them. But, you know, they were still weighing it up. Before they jumped in, that's a sensible thing to do, isn't it? The fence straddlers, if you like. And it's to this group that Joshua primarily addresses his remarks. And he's urging them to move beyond indecision and restlessness to a clear-cut decision for God. Now, which of these three groups here would you find yourself in this morning? Strong and committed? Sold out to this world? Or in between, sort of weighing up the options? Joshua begins his persuasive message by reminding them all that God has done for them. And we didn't read it, but it begins in verse 3. And if you read that from verse 3, he says, between verse 3 and verse 13, 18 times he uses the personal pronoun I. So Joshua says, I, God, I took your father Abram from the other side of the river, led him throughout all the land of Canaan. I multiplied his descendants. I gave him Isaac. To Isaac, I gave Jacob and Esau. I sent Moses and Aaron. I plagued Egypt according to what I did among them. Afterwards, I brought you out, and I brought you into the land of the Amorites who dwell on the other side of the Jordan. They fought with you, but I gave them into your hand that you might possess their land, and I destroyed them before you. I have given you a land which you didn't labor for, cities that you didn't build, and you dwell in them. You eat of the vineyards and the olive groves which you did not plant. 18 times Joshua emphasizes that this is all of God. From start to finish, God went before them. And he's asking them now, make a decision. Is this true or not? Did God go before you? Is it all of God or is it not? Examine the facts, he's saying. The facts seem to be pointing towards God going before them. And he wants to remember them and acknowledge who the real God is. And as we saw at the Jordan River and at Jericho and on numerous other occasions, it wasn't their great military strategies that brought victory, but it was most clearly the power of God going before them. God had done it all, but nevertheless, the people had to choose. They had to choose God for themselves intelligently, decisively, and willingly. And the fact is, we do choose who we will serve. We choose who we will serve. Joshua says, now therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. There can be little doubt when you read this what Joshua is after. The word serve appears 7 times in these few verses. 7 times Joshua says, serve, serve, serve. And Joshua calls for a decision that day that will end the spiritual and the intellectual and the moral apathy that had marked the many lives. And he demands a commitment when he says, and now fear the Lord. Serve him wholeheartedly, without reservation. And Joshua says, there are options. And there are options for us as well. He said there are options, and here's some of the options. He said you can follow the old gods of Mesopotamia, the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river. Abraham did that before his call. You could go and do that if you want. You could worship the old gods of Egypt, the ones that you're so familiar with, having spent 400 years in that land, you're familiar with these gods. You could go and serve them. They're the familiar gods. Or, if you prefer, you can choose to serve the gods of Canaan, the land we've come into. You can pick some gods there. Serve them. If you think that they're going to be more powerful, serve them. Doesn't make a lot of sense because you've seen them defeated, but it is an option. Choose it if you want. But the real God, the God of power, the one true God, Joshua is saying, this is the God that I recommend you choose to serve. And you know, I want to say this morning, it does matter which God you serve. It does matter. It's not like choosing a football team to support. You know, it doesn't really matter. Sometimes they win, sometimes they don't. This matters. All gods are not equal. I was having dinner recently with a guy who is a Roman Catholic converted to Islam, would you believe? And his wife is Islamic. And we were chatting away and he said, very reasonably, of course, it doesn't matter where you go, whether it's the mosque or the chapel or the, you know, wherever you go, the church, it doesn't matter because we all worship the one God, don't we? And it's very embarrassing in some ways to be sitting at lunch with somebody and have to say to them, actually, no, I believe it does matter and that it isn't the same. It can't possibly be the same God we serve. Because Islam says one thing about this God, we say another thing, the Jews say another thing, and so-and-so says another thing. We can't all be serving the same God. It's not possible. There is only one God, and it does matter who you call him. It does matter. And so Joshua says, choose whom you're serving. And I would say this morning, don't swallow that lie that we all just worship the one big God and we'll all get there like rivers going down into a big sea. It does matter. Your river could end up going into the wrong sea. Just be careful which river you're following. It does matter which God you serve. So reflecting on all that God has done in verses 1 to 13... there would appear to be only one sensible choice, unless you just couldn't be bothered, of course. There are four ingredients regarding a true decision for God. Number one, we must be willing to stop sitting on the fence. We must be willing to stop sitting in the fence. There are far too many people in the church today who are trying their best to keep one foot in the world and one foot in the church. It's a really uncomfortable place to be. It's really difficult to do that. I don't envy you when you try that. You don't want to make a commitment that might change your status in the world, but at the same time, you don't want to have to give up your sin completely in order to follow God 100%. You're trying to get the best of both worlds. So you end up, you sit in the fence, you're not really part of the world, you're not really part of the church. You don't belong anywhere. Why would you make a choice not to belong anywhere? To be a fence sitter. So Joshua challenges us to acknowledge that it's time to make a decision. Either enter the world, live by its standards and collect its rewards. Because there are rewards to just throwing yourself into the world. There will be rewards. Collect the rewards, no matter how temporary they are. Or, maybe today, you make a decision to follow God wholeheartedly, without reservation. You know, we need to decide. And remember that no decision is a no decision. Think about that. No decision is a no decision. The answer for some is, well, I want to do it now, but now is not a good time. I had a friend who was an alcoholic. He tried to break that awful habit that was killing him and had wrecked his family already. Lived in a flat on his own by this time. He'd lost his wife and kids. He was losing his job rapidly because he was an accountant. He couldn't keep doing his accounts, being drunk all the time. On one occasion, he physically crawled into my office in the church. So drunk, he couldn't even stagger. He crawled in and he sat in the seat weeping. And I said to him, Ian, you need to give your life to Christ. You can't defeat this on your own. And he said, Billy, I believe everything about Christianity. I just want to clean up my act before I become a Christian. He knew it was true, but wanted to clean up his act so that he could come before God kind of respectably. And I said, Ian, I'm going to make a prediction. You will never become a Christian. He said, no, I will, I will. I said, you will never become a Christian if you're trying to clean up your act. You'll never be clean enough. And a month later, he was dead. Drunk himself to death. He never became a Christian. And too many of us want to clean up our act. We want to come before God respectable. And I can assure you that even the most respectable amongst us would have to crawl into God's presence like Ian crawled in to see me. That's the best we can manage. We cannot come before God and say, God, I'm now in a state where actually I would be an addition to your kingdom. Okay? When people see me, they're going to say, that's what it is to be a Christian. You're a good guy. We can't get there. We need to come to God in all our rags, in all our unworthiness, and just come before him and say, God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm failing all the time. I need your Holy Spirit to give me strength. And that's what God is looking for. People who will do that. And then there are those who won't come to Christ when they are up. Because, you know, why would you need Christ? When everything's going well, I sometimes think it's even harder to reach rich people than it is the poor people. If you're really wealthy and you've got lovely houses and cars and jobs and respectability and you go to the best parties and you get invited to royal weddings and I come and say, you need Christ, are you crazy? I don't need anything. I've got everything I need. Life is wonderful. And I sometimes believe it's harder to reach the rich than the poor. At least the poor can see they have a need of some sort. When you're really wealthy, hard to see you've got any kind of need. That's why Jesus said, how hard is it for rich people to get into heaven? Easier for them to crawl through the eye of a needle than to enter into heaven. It's really hard when you've got riches to humble yourself and say, you know what, I need Christ. And then there's a group in the middle and they just weigh up the options. All the time they weigh up the options. And they weigh until it's too late. They sit in the fence. And the bad news is, Satan owns the fence. Okay? The fence is Satan's. Don't think you're in a safe place when you're on the fence. You're in a dangerous place when you sit in a fence. And a decision for Christ must not be made lightly. Joshua was at this point a mature leader. He was a soldier, hardened from battle. He bore the scars of long-term commitment. And his choice to follow God was not made lightly. It wasn't just an emotional decision made after a particularly strong sermon. That wasn't his decision. It was not held lightly. There's a guy called Francis Schaeffer. Francis Schaeffer has written some amazing commentaries, very devotional commentaries on books of the Bible. And here's what Francis Schaeffer points out about Joshua when he challenged the people. He affirmed that this was his settled choice. And the tense that Joshua used when he made this decision wasn't just a once for all choosing. I'm going to choose, that's it, done and dusted, that's it, decision made. As if he could make a choice and be done forever. The tense involves continuous action. So what Joshua was saying, that it involves the past, it involves the present, it involves the future. It's as if Joshua had said, I have chosen to serve the Lord, I am choosing to serve the Lord right now. That's the path of service I'm on. And I will go on choosing to serve God until the very end. To Joshua, serving the Lord was a daily choice. I heard of a man who had become a Christian, and he had the most amazing testimony. God had performed miracles in his life, and he'd written down this testimony. And people would say, tell us your testimony. And he would get out his paper, and he would read off his testimony. Did this for years and years and years. People would pull him up into pulpits and say, so-and-so is going to tell his testimony. And he would read off his testimony. But you know, he never grew beyond his testimony. It was always going back to this date in the diary. And one day someone visited him and said, I understand you've got a great testimony. And he said, yeah, do you want me to tell you? And he said, yeah, I'll just go and get it. And he nipped upstairs and he came back down and he said to his wife, you know what? I've lost my testimony. He'd lost his bit of paper. And he'd never grown any further beyond that. His testimony was a date in a diary. And let me say, a date in a diary never saved anyone. And I know people who say, I'm all right. 13th of November, 1969. That was my date. That actually was my date. That's when I became a Christian. But you know, I could name you dozens, if not hundreds of other dates when I've made decisions to follow God all over again. And I'll name you a date when I made a decision to follow Christ. 17th of April, 2011. I made a decision to follow Christ this morning. We can't go back to a date. Dates never saved anyone. It's an ongoing relationship and an ongoing decision to follow Christ. Thirdly, we must be willing to go public with our faith. Jesus had something to say to those who have a private confidence in him, but are unwilling to acknowledge him in public. Jesus said, he that denies me before men. In other words, you don't have to speak up to say, I don't believe in Jesus. Just silence is enough. He that denies me before men, him will I deny before my Father in heaven. And he's effectively saying, don't say you believe in me if you're not willing to identify yourself as one of my disciples, whether at home or in business or in your social life or whatever, wherever you go. One of the best decisions I ever made was just to be a Christian. Wherever I go, just be a Christian. Don't think to yourself, am I going out with non-Christian friends tonight? Well, I'll just relax and go with that one. Am I with church people? I'll be a church person tonight. Am I with my family? I'll be a different type of Christian or whatever. And when I decided, I guess in my late teens, I'm a Christian. End of story. I'm not embarrassed about it. I don't have to defend it every time. I don't have to come up with arguments to not look silly. I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian on the golf course. I'm a Christian on the football field. I'm a Christian at home, at the barbecue, at work, wherever, in the church. I'm just a Christian. That's the umbrella that covers my whole life. It informs everything I do. What a relief. Just to have that burden lifted of trying to remember who I'm with and not slip in the wrong word here or there. That's me, I'm a Christian. And I commend it to you. Just be a Christian. Just lose that pretense. Just be who you say you are, a disciple of Jesus Christ. And then we must be willing to follow through with all that we have. Joshua said, don't mix your allegiances with other gods. When Joshua had led the children of Israel into the promised land, into Canaan, they'd quickly begun to dilute their faith, to pick up bad habits from the new culture. And a firm choice had to be made with every generation to follow. And Joshua kind of teases them in verse 19. I quite like his sort of sense of humor here. He says, you know, I hear what you're saying about following God with all your heart, but you guys can't do it. You can't do it. And then they all go, yeah, we can. He says, no, you can't. Yes, we can. It becomes, you know, if you carried on, it'd be a bit of a pantomime, wouldn't it? But he's saying to them, I know you're serious, but you can't do it. So don't bother pretending. Don't bother saying you can and then pretending. And the people in that moment of passion and emotion, they cry out, no, we will serve the Lord. They didn't. They didn't. History tells us that they didn't manage it. And we have to be careful because we influence others with the choices that we make. And Joshua ends his address with what has become known as one of the most powerful testimonies in all of scriptures. He says, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And I don't think that was an emotional decision. I think he thought that out and he said, as for me and my house, regardless of the consequences, regardless of what happens, for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that statement is the culmination of a life lived in obedience to God and to his word. There were times when Joshua failed. There were times when he was discouraged. But once Joshua committed his life to God, there was no going back. He not only influenced his own household, but he influenced a whole nation to serve the Lord. For bad or for good, our influence will extend beyond our immediate surroundings. People are watching to see what your decision means practically in your life. It might not make us popular, but it will make us powerful as people of God. And so the book of Joshua ends with a note of real affirmation. The people responded positively. They said in verse 24, we will serve the Lord our God and obey him. And the bottom line choice of Israel had long-lasting results. Verse 31, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. There was an ongoing positive result from Joshua's commitment. Perhaps you need to make a decision for Christ this morning. And that might be the bottom line decision of your whole life. And when you come to the end of your life, it's the only one that's going to matter. And if you don't make a choice, that's a choice. And I urge you not to go on standing in the middle, straddling the fence. There was a church in modern-day Turkey called Laodicea. And John wrote to them and said, I wish you were one thing or the other. You're neither hot nor cold. Because you're lukewarm, it makes me feel sick. God said, I feel sick as I look at this church. Quite a good church. Church probably quite like ours. And God says, you're making me feel sick. Oh, I would hate to think that God is looking down on us today and he's saying, Fairfield, do you know they were so hot last week? That holiday club was hot. But you know, the week before, it was cold down there. I'm feeling sick. I would hate to think that God would think that of us. And we're living in an age when, just as he has in the past, God is looking for men and women of fearless faith who will step up and step out to accomplish something great for God. And maybe, maybe it's you. Maybe God is looking for you this morning to be a Joshua in this church. Choose you this day whom you'll serve.